First of all, thanks for the opportunity to discuss the good relations work with you. It's actually an effort carried out by a rather small community, but over a sustained amount of time. So first work started back in 2003. So I'm now on slide one, and we move on to slide two. The basic purpose of the good relations ontology is to overcome a very disadvantageous effect of the web on e-commerce. Because if we look at the web, how it is, we're now on slide two, as it currently is, then it may be the biggest friction in automated data interchange between business entities. Because if you look on the left side, you see most enterprises having structured data representations for both the products and services they purchase and the products and services they are offering. Now, almost all enterprises quite clearly maintain some kind of web presence and publish their offering data, descriptions of the products and services they are offering in terms and conditions on the web, and other enterprises are using that data to do price comparison, to set up integrated purchasing processes, and the like. Now, despite the fact that all this is happening on computers, if you if you look at the bottom of that slide, the web in between requires that at the inbound side of data processing, a lot of human labor has to be invested. So, actually, people spend a lot of time fetching product feature details from web pages, entering them into ERP systems, and the like. Now, we're advancing to slide two, three. Quite clearly, this is unsatisfying, and, well, the idea of the semantic web understood as a web of data would fit very nicely in that scenario, in the sense that corporations could publish their product descriptions and offering data in a way that allows harvesting and automated processing by enterprises purchasing the items. And my two slides, two and three, are also a little bit simplistic because they are showing just a pair of enterprises. But in fact, most enterprises are members in multiple value chains. So the traditional approach of agreeing upon one standard of representation as in traditional deep B2B scenarios, that is an unrealistic option if it comes to only spontaneous business relations. So, again, it's a very unsatisfying situation that you have data already in highly structured form, mostly in ERP systems or product data management systems, and you publish things on the web, and in the end, your customers fetch data from those documents and use a lot of human labor to extract and process product features, offering data, and the like. Now we advance to slide four, please. So it comes as no surprise that this has been identified as a potential application of semantic web technology and ontologies pretty early. There are more than 100 papers dating back until the year 2001 describing that the semantic web would be a great improvement for this scenario and alike. Surprisingly, no one has tried to materialize that promise to build the respective ontologies, despite the fact that such scenarios have been used for quite a long time to motivate the need for semantic web technology. Now we're advancing to slide number five. Just to illustrate potential use cases, I mean, assume that there are mainly three branches of scenarios of activities where a better ability to process product offering data by machines would be very helpful. I mean, one large share of those tasks relates to commodity offers, so stationary office supplies, bolts and nuts, and the like. Then services offers. By the way, I'm not talking of web services in here. I'm talking about really real business services, also in the private sector, like getting your hair cut, getting your car serviced, getting your roof renewed and stuff like that. And the third use case is exchanging product model data. So, for example, if Sony Ericsson or Nokia publishes specifications of their new cell phone models on their web pages, and web shops offering those cell phone models to end users could simply harvest all the specifications from the manufacturer's web pages. On the right side, you see a typical example, it's a web shop for outdoor gear, and now the exact meaning of web shops offering certain items deserves some analysis. Because most of those web pages tangle a variety of statements. So the web shop shown in here, for example, basically says that they are selling some sleeping bags. So if you're in need of a sleeping bag, this would be a web page to visit. Also, they are selling explicitly that they sell some unidentified instances of the Marmot sleeping bag model 1234, or however you call it. The third may be that they sell a particular used instance of the Marmot sleeping bag model 1234. It should be noted that usually in commodity e-business, the items actually offered for sale are not exposed on the web. So mostly we don't have identifiers for the actual products you sell, but they are only quantified existentially. It is said that there exists some instances of a certain sleeping bag make and model, and that such will be offered for are being offered for sale by the company. And then as a fourth thing, often small shops offer some kinds of services related to that product range. So, for example, this company may say that they clean and repair sleeping bags made by any manufacturer. So these are typical use case scenarios. For the macroeconomic dimension, you should know that the activities relating to information processing for searching suppliers, selecting suppliers, negotiating with candidate suppliers, and managing all the exchange of goods, they account for a large share of the gross national product of most highly developed companies. There have been studies dating back to the 1970s that basically say that about 50% of our gross national product relates to such coordination tasks related to the exchange of goods. And part of this high share is that based on a high degree of division of labor, we are exchanging very, very specialized goods and services. So the overhead for describing what we are looking for and or what we are offering and the overhead for finding candidate suppliers is much more substantial as compared to a national economy where you don't have a lot of division of labor. Now please advance to slide number six. Now, if you want to make that vision a reality, you basically need at least two ontologies. First, you need an ontology for product types and features. So a vocabulary for describing that a certain object is a sleeping bag or is a TV set, or that it has a certain screen size or a certain weight, or things like that. I've been working for quite some years to derive such vocabularies from existing product classification schemas. That was also a bit more complicated than initially assumed because product categorization schemas are not designed with the rigor of knowledge representation in mind that you need when it comes to building an ontology. In fact, hierarchical classification schemes are often used with different semantics assigned to all the nodes in different contexts. So, for example, you can use the same hierarchy for classifying expenses and for classifying products. When you're classifying expenses, then ice cubes or non-dairy creamer may be considered as expenses for beverages. But when you're looking for actual products or services, then ice cubes and non-dairy creamer are obviously not instances of beverages. So there's quite a lot of work in that direction. But based on that research, we have managed to derive and are continuously deriving updated version from the product classification standard E-Class, which provides more than 30,000 classes of typical goods purchased by industrial enterprises and more than 5,500 properties for product features ranging from screen size to weight, width, diameter, and the like. Now, that issue is almost done, not for all areas, but for a vast amount of the types of products that are being exchanged. A second ontology you need is an ontology for offer specification, for exchanging information about the fact that a certain business entity is offering a certain type of goods or services to a certain audience and constrained by certain terms and conditions. Initially, it had been thought that once you have those ontologies for products and services, the job was done. But quite clearly, that's not the case, because what you need to express is more than just saying that an object O is an instance of TV set. You must, moreover, be able to express the complicated details of an offering, whom you are willing to sell to, which regions you are delivering to, whether they are shipping charges, pricing specifications, and the like. First thing to note in here is that an offer is basically a relation between an agent, a set of objects, a set of property rights, an audience, and a set of terms and conditions. And by the way, this is the name why the ontology presented here tonight is called Good Relations, because it expresses, or is a vocabulary for expressing, the relations between goods and other entities, other resources. Why is an offer a relation? Well, because it is the often non-binding promise to transfer a set of property rights to the first individual who is willing to accept that offer. So it's, for example, important to note that the price of a product is not the price of a product, but it's the price specified of an offering, that is part of an offering. So, for example, I can offer the same good for sale at price A and for purchase at price B. Now, please advance to slide number 7. As said, Good Relations has been published back in 2005 and has gained quite some visibility in the community so far. E-Class O provides a large vocabulary that allows you to state that a certain object is an instance of a certain category of product or service, and allows you to state a certain features or properties of this object. So you can, for example, say that Foo My TV Set is a TV set, and you could also say that it has a screen size of 20 inches and the like. What do you need in parallel to that is an ontology for expressing that, for example, that Miller Inc. is a business entity and Miller Inc. is willing to sell this TV set, for example, to anybody who's willing to pay a respective price. So E-Class O provides the classes and properties for describing what a product or service instance is, and Good Relations provides the vocabulary for expressing the promise made by a business entity to grant you a certain set of property rights on a given product or service instance. Now please advance to slide number 8. When designing Good Relations, I followed a pretty traditional ontology engineering process, first defining the scope of the ontology by motivating scenarios and competency questions. The full competency questions are in the technical report that is available on the project webpage. And here I give you just the most important competency question, which is basically which retrievable web resource describe and offer either to sell, to provide the service of, to repair, to maintain, to lease out, or to dispose a concrete individual or some unknown individuals of a given good, a given service, a spare part for a given good, consumables and supplies for a given good, either described by a type of good or a specific make and model. And then you have certain additional constraints, for example, requirements on properties or intervals for properties, methods of payment, methods of delivery, and whether the offering is valid to consumers or retailers only, and whether it's available in a certain country or region. Already with this competency question, you can cover a large deal of searching for suppliers of products and services on the web. In fact, the competency questions were developed together with several companies in an Austrian research project called Marantology. One of the companies is developing recommender systems for various types of electronic products and also for tourism offers in Austria. What you can see in here, by the way, because this is not just a presentation on the good relations ontology, but also discussing the way that yielded this ontology, is the proposal of how to write down competency questions. So the competency questions should, in my opinion, be exhaustive for defining the scope, the intended scope of the ontology. And this is why I use these curly brackets and the various options that you want in here, so that in a very concise manner you can write down what types of queries you want to be able to answer with the competency questions. This is not fancy. It's based on foundations contributed by the very early advocates of ontology technology back in the early 1990s. But I think it's a very readable approach. Good relations also includes a small upper ontology part that must be reused by all products and services ontologies. Otherwise, it's very difficult to have a common ground for example, spotting that something is actually a product or service. So in the end, E-class O and other products and services ontologies also import good relations. Now please advance to slide number 9. This is just an overview of requirements and features, and you see already from the number of bullets in the list that despite the fact that it looks very simple to just describe the price and details of an offering, you get a pretty long list of requirements for real business scenarios. So first of all, one requirement that is not easy to fulfill is that you need support for ranges and units of measurements. You must be able to say that we are repairing TV sets that have a screen size between 10 and 40 inches, or we are transporting pianos that weigh less than 150 kilograms and stuff like that. Or also in a search, you want to be able to express that you're looking for a cell phone that lasts for between 10 and 30 days, and you want to find a cell phone that actually operates for 18 days. You must be able to express the type of business function that is part of the offering, for example, whether the offering is an offering to sell, to lease, to dispose, to repair, or other types of activities. So you must be able to distinguish that. It should be compatible with existing old variants of products and services ontologies, because you don't want to start from scratch and reinvent the wheel all over again, because those ontologies are so large. You want to support all ISO 4217 currencies, so that you're able to express the currency of price specifications and can use simple conversion services to consolidate offerings, so that you can actually compare an offering in US dollars with an offering in Europe. You want to be able to define eligible regions. You find such already in very simple selling scenarios. For example, on the Amazon web pages, you can mostly see which countries they are willing to ship to. Then something that's a bit more tricky is you want to support both selling explicit instances, descriptions of product models, and anonymous instances. So, for example, if you have an eBay web page that sells a particular instance of TV set, and you have another web page that says just we are selling some unknown instances of TV set, and you have a third page on which Sony is describing the offer of a certain TV set make and model, then you want to be able to query issue a query that will return both actual instances offered on eBay, anonymous instances offered by a web shop, and suitable models described on a manufacturer's web page. You want to be able to support common delivery and shipping methods, at least those used in the commodity field. You want to be able to specify and filter by accepted payment methods. You want to be able to say whether a certain offering is valid for certain types of business entities only, for example, retailers, or whether it's available to consumers. You want to be able to specify the type and duration of the warranty promise. So, for how long the warranty will last, and what its scope will be. Will it just refer to parts and materials, or including labor, or including pickup, and stuff like that. You want to be able to specify different prices for different types of customers, for example, retailers and end users, or for different quantities. So 1 euro for one up to 10 items, and 70 cents for quantities beyond 10. You want to be able to specify charges for certain payment or delivery options, and that also individually per region or country. Because when you compare offerings, then what you're interested in is the total price, including shipping charges, and such must be supported by the ontology. You want to be able to express product bundles for all kinds of units of measurement. So, for example, you should be able to say that 2 kilograms of butter plus 2 cell phones are sold for 99 euros. Note that you have to you cannot break that down to individual offerings, because in most cases you don't have a price for the individual components. It should be as compatible with international standards as possible regarding languages, regions, and the like. Also, a requirement that evolved during the development was that you should only expect minimal reasonable support. So the goal was to develop an ontology that works well with any RDFS style reasoner, so a subset of old DLP, as well with a DL or Terhorst reasoner. Because if you have a fully fledged DL ontology and require DL reasoning, then you may run into problems, because most products and services knowledge bases are extremely large. E-Class O has an RDFS XML file that is 30 to 60 megabytes in size alone, and most DL reasoners are already facing some kind of trouble loading the pure ontology without a single instance included. Also, requirement from the practitioners involved was that it should support price ranges, list prices, time zones, European article numbers, and look, international location numbers, and Dun & Bradstreet numbers for companies and the like. Now, the price ranges and list prices are interesting, because for long, with some background in ontology engineering, I had refused price ranges and list prices, because they are ontologically very, very blurry. I mean, if someone says we sell a hotel room for between 100 and 400 euros, that doesn't tell you anything. Not something that is really useful for the matchmaking. But it was a request from practitioners, and we found a way to model that as well. Now, please advance to slide number 10.
Oh, pardon? I just wanted to make it clear. There's only about 10 minutes to go.
Okay. Well, that should be fine.
Okay.
One thing that good relations phases, and basically any ontology in a corporate setting phases is that you are constrained that by two bottlenecks. I mean, first of all, the ontology cannot be a lot more granular than the existing data structures are. So if your ontology is a very good one, a very clean one from the conceptual modeling perspective, but it requires distinctions that are more subtle than the distinctions that the existing databases make, then it's very hard for people maintaining existing databases to populate the ontology, to populate a knowledge base that refers to that ontology. So, for example, if your ontology requires that you split street addresses in street name and number, and many popular systems just store this in one single string, then you put the burden on everybody using your ontology to cleansify, to lift and augment the existing data, which may make it very difficult for users to adopt your ontology. For example, if we require that you classify all your products before being able to publish any data, then it's very hard to derive respective knowledge bases automatically from existing systems. And the second bottleneck is that, on the other hand, the ontology should be subtle enough to allow rule-based transformation into most popular target structures, for example, in the form of popular software or popular exchange standards, popular XML schemas, and the like. So that is an actual problem, and in many cases we had to fight hard to find a compromise with practitioners using the ontology, because some details that we deemed absolutely necessary could just not be exported from the existing knowledge structures and were seen as hampering the adoption of the ontology. So I think this is a general problem. Okay, now please advance to slide number 11. One core distinction that a good relations makes is that you have four core types of conceptual elements. You have business entities, you have offerings, you have products and services, and you have web resources. For those with a background in ontology engineering, it's pretty clear that you have such distinct types, and you need to keep them distinct. For many practitioners, it's not immediately clear that they suddenly need to break down their wonderful one web page web shop into four distinct entities. So if you have a small web shop that has just one URI for the web shop and for the offering and for the web page and for the product, then suddenly you need distinct identifiers. And it's sometimes hard to communicate to practitioners that you need to keep them distinct, because a business entity and the product and service being offered is quite clearly not the same. So please advance to slide 12. Okay, this is quite clearly not actually readable. It just gives you an idea of the total domain capture. You see the key entities here, the business entity, the offering, products and services. You see warranty scope. We also support specifications on points of sale, so opening hours and stuff like that. Okay, please advance to slide 13. Now, design considerations for the ontology or problematic issues are listed in here. First of all, the choice of a suitable ontology language was something that we spent quite some thought on. Handling ranges and intervals and data types, modeling classes, product models, product instances, and only existentially quantified product instances, handling N-Array relations in O. Most of you will know that O and RDFS don't support, only support binary relations, so handling relations of higher arity requires some workarounds, and the licensing issue, of course. Oh, please advance to slide 13. 14. As for the suitable ontology language, the compromise we eventually ended up was using the OODL syntax for RDFS elements So basically using a subset of the closure of all DLP, a small subset. Basically we just need class, object property, data type property, subclass of, and subproperty of, and RDF data type and RDF type, you know, and all ontology quite clearly. The idea was to find a fragment that works well with semantic web infrastructure as available today. So we don't wait for new infrastructure that may be available 2 years from now. We wanted to produce something that works with Olim and Sesame with rule-based reasoners so that you can really start making semantic web-based e-commerce a reality. On the other hand, combining the ontology with ontologies or knowledge bases that are actual ODL should not lead to a model beyond DL, for example, make you end up in old full, which would be the case if our ontology was modeled in pure RDFS. Also, by this choice, we avoid layering problems between RDFS and OL that can be a problem when the ontology uses a more powerful fragment. So actually, I think this ontology language fragment is a pretty pragmatic choice for similar situations. You can do quite some nice reasoning if you want, but if you have an incomplete RDFS style reasoner only, then you will have a very scalable environment. Okay, then please proceed to slide number 15.
Okay, you have about
five.
Now, how
to handle ranges and intervals. I mean, there is some theoretical work on expanding OL by constructs for ranges and intervals, so that you're actually able that a TV set, that a repair service for TV sets between 10 and 10.5 inches, kilograms of weight. This range can be expressed as a custom data type. We did, for example, the old EU approach is one common proposal. On the other hand, it's not supported by common reasoners, and it will be quite a long way until it may be supported by mainstream infrastructure. So we took a different approach, workaround that may be useful in other environments as well. We explicitly model a value as an instance of a class quantitative value. We define two properties, has min value, has max value, and has unit of measurement, which also allows for encoding values using different arbitrary units of measurement. And now, of course, in theoretically, most or all quantitative values are actually intervals, but in many practical scenarios, you want to specify that the min and max, that the upper and lower bound are identical. So for that, and that is the workaround, we define an additional property has value, which is a subproperty of both has max value and has min value. So every reasoner that supports the closure of RDFS subproperty of will infer that a value that has value 10 has min value 10 and has max value 10. So you can very easily handle ranges without needing actual extensions of all, and yeah, you pose a little bit of the handling of ranges to the to the one issuing the query, of course. Okay, please, slide 16.
So, Martin, can I interrupt for a second? I mean, you've reached the time limit. Do you think you could finish in 5 minutes?
Yes, I think so. Just
so can you move, move a little quicker?
What we should touch is slide 16 is good relations faces the problem that that the ontologies for products and services use the same classes for describing product models and product instances. So, for example, the class TV set in E-class may be used to describe a TV set make and model or an actual TV set. In particular, they have a large amount of properties, and you want to be able to use the same properties for a TV set, make and model, and for an actual TV set, though they are semantical and not perfectly equivalent. So good relations uses a workaround in here in that it defines a top-level class product or service that is the union of actual product or service instances, product service models, and product or service, some instances, placeholders. And by making an actual instance of TV set, toy TV set, what you see on the left, also an instance of either one of the three orange subclasses. You can specify whether you're dealing with an actual instance that will be gone once sold, with a make and model, or with a placeholder for anonymous, for existentially quantified instances. This allows using the same ontology for products and services for all three types without replicating the 5,500 properties. A problem is that you need non-standard reasoning for inferring feature defaults for product instances from the product model as specified. Now, that's probably a bit too complex to explain in the remaining time. It's explained in the technical report available on the web page. Okay, then please proceed to slide 17. Okay, product bundles are supported, but probably we don't need to go into too much detail in here. You just have a note that specifies what's included, how much is included, and in which unit of measurement the quantity is specified. So we can proceed to slide 18. N-area relationships, as most of you know, are a problem in Olint RDFS. There are many higher arity relations in the good relations ontology. We use the standard workaround for such by defining a placeholder node and attaching n minus one of the attributes to this placeholder node. What may be a nice workaround also for other projects is that we make all n-ary relationship classes a subclass of n-ary relation, n-ary placeholder or a similar class, so that you know which classes are just placeholders for n-ary relationships, which keeps the ontology well readable. Okay, as for the license, it was also very important for us to give adapters certainty about permanent royalty-free access to the ontology, and after some consideration, we decided for the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, which is pretty open. So please, once to slide 20. We wanted to reuse as much of the existing consensus as possible, for example, as far as countries, currencies, locations were concerned. There are basically two approaches for reuse. You can just use existing numbering schemas as ranges for literal values, or you can replicate each value as an ontological instance. These problems are described in one of the papers given in the end also. We decided for the first option mainly because we didn't want to replicate all existing standards because this creates some IPR problems. Gavin, please advance to slide number 21. This is a minimal example of the actual good relations ontology. You see here three colors. In orange are all elements included in the good relations ontology. In green are all language elements that are provided by the products and services ontologies, for example, E-class O. And in blue are particular offering details, so the actual data. And you see on the left you have a business entity. The link to the web resource is done using the simple RDFSC also property. So we don't define a class for web resource because that's already provided by RDFS. We have an offering in the middle, offering one. It has attached the business function supported. It has attached the price specification, which uses the specifies the currency value, the currency, and the unit of measurement. C62 on the top is the UNC fact code for peace, just as an explanation. And then attached to the offering are one or multiple nodes, type and quantity node, and they are linked using the good relations includes object property. When you specify the amount of this goods on the good on the left side, the type of the good links to the actual product or service, and the unit of measurement is the unit of measurement to which the amount of this good relates. And on the bottom, you see the description of the TV set as an instance of TV set and having a screen size of 30 centimeters. There's also a primer describing this example on the web page. Now, please advance to slide 22. Industry and academia for the ontology is pretty good. We have strong support from Smart Information Systems, a small startup company in Austria who builds recommender systems for products and services based on semantic web technology. There's also an Austrian movement called EB Semantics. They are building ontologies for tourism, accommodation, electrical appliances, and the like, and they are all compatible to Good Relations now. Now, since about a week, Good Relations is officially included in the Yahoo Search Monkey technology, so it's one of the few recommended vocabularies, and it can be expected that in future, in the future, if you produce Good Relations compliant metadata, then your search results will include more details in the Yahoo listing. And there are sponsor cartridges for Amazon, eBay, and others from OpenLink software, which are also to be expected. We're also working with about 60 manufacturers of open source and commercial web shop software to provide exporters from existing web shops. And slide 23, please. Now, an ontology doesn't diffuse into a community just by putting it on the web. I mean, that was something I was always surprised of, that there was a certain degree of naivety in the academic ontology and engineering community, and particularly in the early days. Just you put your old file on the web and then your job is done. Actually, based on diffusion strategy and business management, we tried to pave the ground for the adoption of Good Relations by three measures. First of all, making creating Good Relations compliant data easy. We're working on a Good Relations annotator and validator that allows small businesses to create respective data, same as the FOV format allows it for FOV. We're working on exporters for popular web shops using the Triplify component. We're working on converters for catalog data interchange formats so that if you have respective data, you can derive RDF XML from the respective XML files, and publishing recipes and patterns for typical scenarios. Second, we try to make creating Good Relations data attractive by working hard on winning search engine vendors and recommender system providers so that it actually pays out to produce Good Relations data. And we foster the development of compatible vocabularies, namely eCrowd O, EB Semantics Ontologies, My Ontology, and a couple of others that I cannot yet speak of publicly. So please advance to slide 24. One feature we included in Good Relations, which may also be an option for many other ontologies, was a human-readable documentation that is made a reality not by content negotiation. That means the server returns an HTML file when such as requested by a browser, and returns RDF XML if a semantic web application is fetching the file, but by always returning the RDF XML file plus a pointer to a style sheet that is executed locally on the browser. Actually, this allows rendering on the client without the need to for content negotiation. So when you look up the ontology in your browser, you see what you see here on the slide, but it's an actual old file. So it's we don't send you an HTML file, but it's the actual old file, just includes a pointer to a transforming style sheet. And then please slide 25. Some things for discussion. We currently have a very lightweight axiomatization. We are thinking about adding disjointness axioms and the like, for example, in an external module. This would allow to use a reasoner for some compliance checks. But we don't have made up our opinion on that. We thought about providing a microformance variant, but on the other hand, with the advent of RDFA, this may be a lesser issue now. So then please advance to slide 26. Additional information is on the following webpage, http://pool.org, Good Relations. We have the ontology, language reference, the primer, recipes, and the full wiki there. So it was also very important for us that you have a full documentation before you actually announce the ontology. Then slide 27, please. Here's a list of papers that explain the theoretical work underlying the ontology. All of those papers and some others are available on the URI given below, http://hetnet.de publications. Okay, then please proceed to slide 28, which is actually the last one. Yeah, that is the link. Okay, that was it from my side. Thanks for your interest. I think it was now 45 minutes. Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
So now we can move to general discussion. The let's see, Rex Brooks, you have your hand up.
Fine. Excuse me just a second. My question was for the first speaker, and he actually answered it, and we can take that offline in an email.
Okay. And now we have Robbie. Do you have your hand up?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
My question is that there is absolutely no doubt in your superior use of ontologies, and I'm really grateful for your nice presentation, which certainly has bridged a lot of gaps, namely how ontologies can be used between, you know, you go to eBay or Amazon or any other site, and they have different kinds of standards for advertising, defining, purchasing, and of course their commercial process is fairly standardized. Here is your shopping cart, you pay by credit card, you check out, you choose shipping options, tax options, etc. So that part at the back end is very, very standardized. But what you are bringing in is a lot of richness in terms of goods, products, and services, and also in using those aspects of OWL and RDFS and ontologies in providing service type applications. Now, with all that big commentary, my question is, yes, technology and techniques demonstrated are useful and will be very beneficial. But what's our game plan in terms of roping in those kinds of engines that I just described exist in terms of volume business that happens commercially? If we can zero in on those and accelerate the, I'm sorry to use the word marketing, but not, it's in a profit kind of sense, marketing of this technology and solution in terms of acceptance by user communities such as book sales, et cetera,
Yes. I think your question includes at least two questions. At least that's what I got from it. The first question is, okay, how rich can the actual description of the products and services being sold be? And actually, in here, I didn't include that in the presentation, but we are planning on supporting a wide range of a wide spectrum, ranging from shops that will specify the type of product being sold only by attaching a label, a string to it, to communities where you have fully fledged DL ontologies describing a taxonomy of product and services types. And the reason why I think this spectrum of wealth of description is necessary is, if you go back to my slide describing the import and export, the two bottlenecks, that was on slide 10 actually, you have many shops in the commodity sectors who don't have their offerings properly classified according to any taxonomy. They just have very, very badly structured textual descriptions. Now, if I enforced on those users, if I forced those users to classify all their items before they can publish their offerings, then they would not adapt good relations, even though quite clearly it would be desirable to know more about what is being sold than the label being attached. But let's be clear about that. There's already a high gain in processing data when you know the eligible countries, that a certain integer number is actually the minimum quantity, and that you know that it is, for example, the shipping charge is a certain amount of euro or is a certain amount of dollars and stuff like that. So good relations, the good relations part is meant as very lightweight and using such a language fragment that it can be used across various communities such that require heavyweight ontologies for describing the product and services and such being able to use only very lightweight ones. So I always hesitate to stress that you can also use it without E-class OL or any other detailed products and services ontology, but at least then you can say what your offer can encode all the commercial aspects of your offering in a way suitable for computers. Now, the second question I got from, or the second part of your question is, as far as I understood it, whether you have the degree of standardization you should enforce. And I mean, quite clearly there's a trade-off between the effort for standardizing a representation and the gain in reusability you have. The more dynamic, the more diverse a community is, the more difficult is it to reach consensus. So in fast-moving communities, you will not have a fully-fledged product and services ontology right from the beginning. Now, the third part of your question is for the marketing of it. Yes, actually, I think that developing a good ontology is the first challenge, but making sure that the incentive patterns are in place so that it can actually be adapted by rationally acting humans is as important. It may not be there may be scenarios where the benefit for society is immediately clear. For example, in the first presentation, we have a scenario where we know the amount of documents we have. The benefit for society by improving access is also easily quantifiable. And you also have likely large stakeholders where convincing them is a matter of talking to a finite amount of bodies. So, for example, if you convince a set of health insurance companies to support that work. Now, if it comes to very small business opportunities, then you must win the support by lots of independent economic agents or independent economic actors. And this requires that the incentive schema for the adoption is clear. And this is why I'm trying to make it both as easy as possible and as financially rewarding as possible to use the ontology. So now with Yahoo supporting good relations, there is quite a high incentive even for small businesses to export RDF XML data according to good relations from their shop. If there is no search engine harvesting the data, then it is hard to convince people to take the time to read the specification. So I hope this answered your question.
Oh,
if
yes.
Not, please.
Oh, yes. Quite a bit, yes. Only thing I was drawing one more parallel was the e-exchanges as a parallel example to see how they, a small registration of community, a vertical community, such as a petroleum exchange or a metal exchange or semiconductor exchange, they do volume business in billions.
Yep.
So can we see that we have enough rules defined for e-commerce to have these ontologically rich concepts adopted by vertical communities?
I did quite some work on the economics of ontology adoption, and those are preliminary studies, but what you can see is that, for example, the full integration of multiple ontologies of a certain domain, the complete description of a domain is often not the economically efficient solution. So assume that, for example, you have two product and services ontologies, then an ontology engineer would assume that you must have a complete mapping between those. My background is in economics, and I basically think that as far as establishing interoperability between two representations, there will be an efficient subset. So I'm perfectly fine with two communities, and I think this is what you're referring to, using partly incompatible standards for describing the types of services or of products or services. So, for example, there's good reason why Good Relations leaves out the battle between E-Class and UNSPSC. Those are two huge taxonomies with about 25,000, 30,000 product categories, but the semantic relationship between any of those two any nodes in those two systems is most likely just partly overlaps with. So creating a meaningful mapping between 25,000 classes on one side and 30,000 classes on the other side is a major and open issue. And it's not necessary to solve that problem in order to use Good Relations for some benefit in automating product data exchange. One more thing you said, I mean, of course we have data interchange based on XML schemas in businesses, but only this requires that you have a certain number of business transactions with the same partner, because otherwise setting up the data exchange on the basis of that schema doesn't really pay out. So you cannot harvest the enormous amount of persistently published data on the web. And the idea of Good Relations is that you will be able to harvest, for example, product model data directly from Brother, from Sony Ericsson, from Volkswagen and BMW into your shop when you're offering a certain item.
Wonderful, wonderful. One last technical question, and then I'll be quiet, is that how much value will NRE relations, NRE rather than binary relations, you think will add to the accuracy of the solution?
Basically, it is more a question of beauty. If you come from a conceptual modeling background, then any formalism that forces you to represent NRE relations using workarounds, that will always bother you. But basically, the information loss is not relevant. I mean, it's just that it may cost you a little bit in terms of efficiency, because the graph gets a bit more complex, but on the other hand, you only have binary relations, which means the processing will likely be faster. So it's, to be frank, I think the lack of NRE relations, in although it annoys me, is more a question of beauty than of performance.
We'll be surprised as semantics progress, as this formalism progresses. I think we'll be surprised that appropriate multiple relations will improve the accuracies in searches and finding the right products and services. But let's say I'll reserve my comment on that, but I think NRE is going to multiply the accuracy multifold.
Yeah. I mean, there has been work, for example, on the WSML family of languages, a nice syntax for a new family of web semantics languages has been developed in Innsbruck by Dairy, now STI, and partners. And it really has a clear, readable syntax, and it supports higher arity relations. But I still think that it's for most practical applications, the workarounds will do the trick. So
yes, very helpful, very valuable presentation. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome.
Martin, this is Ken. I have a question about what exactly would you see as the relationship between your ontology and technologies like SOA and web services as they exist today? I mean, exactly
okay.
What
they
is the relationship?
They are widely
there?
Unrelated, actually. I mean, Good Relations is meant to provide a vocabulary for exposing, offering data on the web, so offering data, basically the offerings made by web shops, eBay pages, Amazon pages, and the like. I mean, first of all, it's meant to support, to describe offerings related to commodities and commodity services only. By good reasons, I did not dig into the open field of semantic web services description.
However, one should say that services for me are actual services like getting your hair cut or getting your car washed, and not a web service that you can invoke to get a quotation for that service. Good relations now includes a feature that is basically actually a subproperty of RDFSC also, which I don't remember the name right now, but it is a property that allows you to specify the URI under which you can find an invocable service that provides additional information. So you could use it to describe in a very, very lightweight fashion web services related to an offering. But, yeah, basically it's orthogonal. I mean, you can use web services for invoking any functionality when it comes to the transaction phase, but good relations mainly supports the discovery and selection phase, searching for a supplier.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
The only part of transactions it supports is the importing of model data. For example, when you are a retailer and you know the URI of a certain product model that you are selling.
Does it not also help in terms of the buyer or the explorer who wants to search and find something with the use of simple, I mean, or less complex services provided by Good Relations Ontology?
I'm not sure I understand you correctly. I mean, you could use good relations also to express that you are searching a certain type of goods that would just require a certain a new business function, and we are considering that you also have a business function of interested in or is regularly purchasing a certain type of goods, so that you can, for example, say, we are buying used cars.
Yes.
Okay, we need to.
But it is supported by the conceptual model, and it basically just requires adding a single ontological instance for the business function. And we are considering that. For reasons of simplicity, it had not been included in the first release, but we're doing some small changes as the ontology is already being used, quite clearly backward compatible changes.
Okay, we're running out of time here, and I just noticed that Peter Yim would like to say something.
Yes.
Peter?
Yes, I have a question actually for both presenters. First of all, before I even start, I would like to commend both presentations. They're just absolutely marvelous. I noticed both of you have sort of special effort into the adoption or the diffusion of the technology you and process that you have developed. However, unlike what Ontolog believes, I mean, in advancing the field of ontological engineering through adoption into international standards, neither of you actually have gone that route. I was wondering whether you've considered it and sort of believe that that's probably not the right approach, or whether you haven't had time to get around to that. Maybe
this is Martin. I have an immediate answer to that. We have plans to submit good relations as a W3C standard submission, but well, this has not been a priority because there are two ways of submitting standards to W3C. At least you can submit it; it's acknowledged, and it may well rotten somewhere in the archives, or you can submit something that already has quite some impact, and actually we wanted to work on the adoption before we try to get it standardized. So we first want to have software solutions actually supporting it before we start with the standardization route. But yes, I think having at least key ontologies being backed by a standardization body makes a lot of sense.
No, and for the wound ontology, we are really working first. I think that's necessary on valuable consensus within the domain experts community, and then we can go one step further and standardize or send it to some standardization community or people deciding whether this standardization could be accepted or not.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank both of our speakers. This is really a really very impressive session. I think that you brought up a lot of very interesting issues, and that my hope is that we can then move this discussion to our mailing list and to other forums for further considerations and further discussions. So I want to thank
you. Yes, I would love to continue to discuss. Some discussions on good relations have already been taking place on the mailing list. And
yes, it's already continuing. Sven, I hope that we can get you involved in this as well.
Absolutely.
And,
thank you.
Yeah. So I'd like to, thank the speakers, and I believe it's now time that we close this session. I would also like to thank all of our participants for their questions and for involvement in this session.
Well, also from as a speaker, thanks a lot for organizing it, for the whole initiative. I think it's very valuable to have an industry-driven group of contributors to the field, and I think many of the things that are now being corrected in the semantic web research communities towards considering cost and benefit aspects of ontologies, such things have been under debate in the Ontolog forum for quite a while. So I really think it's an important contribution. And again, thanks for the invitation and hosting this session.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Great session. Thank you.
Bye,
everyone.
Else.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.